morning.
Good morning. We can call the, we can call the Planning and Development Real Estate Committee to order. First of all, we have minutes from the February 28th meeting. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Okay, the second, the first item on the agenda is an action item, and it's the parking lease for the former Southeast bus facility. And Mr. Rickle, you're going to do that one?
Yes, Ms. Hodges, I'll do the presentation. Mr. Bottenheimer's out of the office today. Before you today to speak about the lease of the Southeast Bus Garage in the adjacent parking lot. The benefits of this action provides us a lease would enhance interagency cooperation. The revenues would offset operating expenses associated with the closure of the Southeast Bus Garage, and continued activity would avoid liability of an unused vacant building and lot. Cost to the authority for this project is zero. And can I bring it up?
You're going quite fast. That's good.
The purpose today, and we'll have a picture here, I hope, in a second, of the actual site. Here's the site. The large building in white in the middle is the actual bus garage. And to the left, it's a little off-center, but is the parking lot that is adjacent to South Capitol and Van Street. The Van Street lot holds about, anticipated about 80 cars. We believe that the bus garage itself will be closer to 200. So we're here today to request board approval to authorize negotiation and execution of a lease agreement with the Washington National Stadium LLC for use of the Southeast Bus Garage and the adjacent surface parking lot. And generally, we allocate revenues from a lease to the general funds, but we're asking that it be allocated, that the lease revenue be allocated to the operating reserve account for the Southeastern Bus Garage. Again, we have we've shown you the two sites. The operation, just a little background, the operation of the Southeastern Bus Garage will end tomorrow night after close of service. Buses will then be reallocated to other locations. The Southeast Bus Garage equipment will be removed between the 29th and the 19th of April. The Van Street lot, which will be emptied essentially Friday night, we are proposing a lease with the Nationals for that lot to begin in use starting on this Saturday, with the first game being Saturday night, and then for events at the stadium after that. Southeast Western Garage, in the presentation that we sent out to you, indicated that the lease on the garage would not start till April 20th, but the Nationals have asked to make some modifications to the facility, and they want to do that prior to their first actual use of the bus facility on April 23rd, so we've adjusted the lease to begin on April 6th, so they'll have the opportunity to come in and make some improvements to the facility totally at their cost. This would have a base one-year lease with the options of an additional year. Certainly hope that we have the opportunity to sell the property long before those times come up, so we have a 30-day cancellation clause so that we can get out of the lease anytime during the year. Assuming 12-month base lease and exercise of options for a second 12 months, annual revenue received by Metro for fiscal years would be, as shown here, $94,000 this fiscal year, $445,000 in 2009, and $358,000 in year 10. Again, we hope that that isn't the case and that the property is leased. And we're here again just to recommend to the board the authorization to negotiate and execute the parking leases, and to allocate the lease reserves of the operating reserve account for Southeastern Bus Garage.
Any questions? Madam Chair, I've not had a chance to discuss this with Mr. Rica yet. After looking at this and given some of the needs that we will be discussing in a few minutes, we have both operating and capital needs. And I think we should really reserve these dollars into the capital account. And I've not had a chance to discuss it with our staff, but there is some immediate projects needs that you would be finding out in a few minutes. It's not significant dollars, but it can fix some of the issues that we have.
That's an interesting part. Thank you. So just as a capture of what we've said here, this is not a metro going into parking. This is a temporary use and a use that would generate some revenue as we wait to find a best use of that property.
All of the activity would be in the hands of the Nationals.
Mr. Benjamin, thank you.
I appreciate, Ms. Hutchins, the way you put that, and I appreciate the clarification by the general manager that this money will go to meet the real critical capital needs that we have. I'm concerned about this project as well as one that will come up in the board meeting for Montgomery County, in which we are essentially using our land for destination parking. And I note that Chairman Hutchins did just say that this is a temporary use, but we have in the past tried very hard never to use our land to allow people to avoid riding Metro. And so when you have a situation like this, what we're doing is we are fostering the ability for people to avoid riding Metro and instead park. I understand there's an enormous parking need, and I also understand we have a need for money. But I would like us to reflect as we consider this project upon whether this is an appropriate use of our funds and or an appropriate use of our land, and even for a temporary basis, whether we should be fostering destination parking where people avoid using Metro.
I agree. From the public policy standpoint, our job is to provide transit for mobility. However, this is a situation where we have vacant land, and it's sitting there, and if we do not lease it for this purpose, it will still sit there. I'm not trying to encourage more cars. There will not be a significant number of vehicles that can park on this lot. I just saw it as an opportunity that came to us to gain revenues when we have a great need for revenues based upon property that's will be vacant, and it will be vacant effective Friday night. I had to swallow hard on this one myself because I believe we should not, as you have said, use our land to encourage the use of automobiles, but there is a need in this area based upon a balance. I thought this was a project that we could move forward with.
Well, I appreciate Mr. Benjamin's comments about the additional parking. I don't really think it's a significant impact, certainly on the use of Metro. It's a relatively small amount of parking. But my concern is your statement, Cato, about just the putting the money that we earn from this in the general capital fund. Certainly there's going to be a cost of the buses and then the relocation on the operating side, and I'd just as soon keep it applied to those operating expenses, not to the capital program.
The operating expenses for the buses, at least for the immediate future, will be reimbursed by the District of Columbia in an agreement that was made in earlier meetings. In addition, the board took action that revenues from the sale of the property, which are capital dollars, would be used for operating dollars. Whichever account you put it in, the dollars are going to be spent. We could debate probably all day. I was looking at it from the standpoint of expenditure needs right now. And the expenditure needs we have today are some of the capital programs. The operating costs that will occur effective Saturday will be reimbursed by the District of Columbia.
The temporary use, what's the term of that?
Okay. The lease is for a year, but we have a 30-day termination clause in the event that we're actually able to sell the property.
But you're exactly what's being anticipated?
That the property would be used for events at the stadium.
What I'm saying is, do we expect it beyond a year?
There is a possibility because of the
temporary?
Temporary could be up to until we start build a new facility or construction begins on this site. It could be 2 years. I mean, if you look at the monies that are coming in, we anticipate, hopefully, that we will resolve the issues on the property and construction will begin, and so we will be out of that lease. I hope it's not 2 years, but
if
possible.
I think perhaps we should put a time limit on this one. I think Mr. Benjamin's point is well taken. We're not in the business of using our assets so that people can not take transit. We're not here to promote the use of the automobiles. And, you know, the amount here is fairly small, and, you know, if there's a temporary need, that's one thing. Paid for outside, I understand that. But I don't want to see us slipping into something, and I've certainly seen this with temporary parking lots. And my colleagues have had that experience too, where after a while they're not temporary anymore. There's something everybody expects, and how can it go away? And that's definitely not the business we're in. The way that promotes our overall mission. I would be more comfortable if we knew that there was a certain and.
Mr. Zimmerman, it is a one-year lease
with
an option, but we also have written very strongly into the agreement, and I think, I mean, again, that we can be out in 30 days, and everybody, I mean, all parties understand that if the property is available for sale and we can make the actual sale, that we will terminate the lease.
Put it differently. I'm not concerned about the termination. I'm concerned about the renewal. On what terms can it be extended or renewed?
I understand.
Okay.
Let's make this a one-year agreement.
No,
we can come back to you if there's any issues on renewals.
So it would then take affirmative action by the board to extend it or renew it?
Yes.
Thank you.
Other questions? Is there a motion?
Well, again, I have a little heartburn on the second element of the motion, but
I don't think that's in the motion.
Well, I'm looking at the recommendation. Is that the recommendation? Been revised from the original written recommendation.
Move what you want to move.
Okay.
But I think you want the lease.
That's correct. I move that we accept the lease.
And okay. That's accepting the lease with the, as only that motion. Is there a second to? Discussion?
Clarification now on use of funds and period of the lease.
Do you have a question? Are you are?
I'm not, clear. What are we voting on?
Chairman,
the motion
that I heard was that it's only the first part, and
exactly
I assume it
right.
included the limitation that was just in the.
That's correct.
With use of funds
year.
To be determined.
I think that's the next argument.
Okay.
I think
right.
we have one motion on the table, and that is not that is only the acceptance of the lease. The terms set forth in the discussion, clarifying that we're going to bring it back for any additions. Okay.
Right.
Any other discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Now, clarification on the use of funds?
My recommendation is that we use the funds for capital, but and the reason for that is we've already identified in, by prior board action, again, identified the monies for the operating aspect of this move from two sources. One, until the sale of the property, the District of Columbia has agreed to fund the operating deadhead costs. And once the property is sold by prior board action, should this sale go through, the board action identified monies for the operating of the buses until the new facility is built. So I recommend that it goes into a capital fund.
Go ahead.
The original recommendation had been the operating,
mm-hmm.
operating reserve. It says operating reserve account for Southeastern Bus Garage.
We've had two actions in the past. Once when we got board authorization to sell the property, agreement was that we would take $9.25 million and put it in this account to offset the cost while we were building the new facility. When we came back to the board and indicated that we wanted to, at the district's request, to close the facility, there was $1.39 million left from the funds that came from the sale of the parking lot adjacent to the Navy Yard station. And the board authorized that money to go into this account. So there is an account that's already established that will have 1.39, or that has 1.39 million in it, that will be used first, then the district's money, and then when we get the sale of the property, another 9 million would go into that for operating expenses. So this is the account that we would put this money into under the recommendation.
So the ultimate use of this account is
to offset operating costs. For the reallocation of Southeastern buses to other
what
facilities.
What time period? Cost accumulated from when?
From starting Saturday until they are returned to the new facility, replacement facility for Southeast.
So that's, I understood it differently when it was, well, what you really mean is for the operating expenses.
Yes.
And so I think that Mr. Giancola's question is a reasonable one. If there are operating expenses, you're not putting this money into that, you're saying there's going to be enough to cover them somehow?
Yes, there's money in that account from first the $1.39 million that is left over from the activities towards the new garage that is in there.
I understand there's some other money, but yes. I assume that whatever you calculated before was to fund what was needed, and yep. Were you going to have extra money?
Now, eventually it will be applied to this project, right?
Well, the recommendation as written would have just applied this to that fund to help pay for it. There is money in the account, and the district has agreed to pay, as Mr. Cato said, the district has agreed to pay any funds that are not in the account until the time that's brought to
understand. So you're going to use the money in this for operating expenses in the interim?
Yes.
And then there's an ultimate construction project?
Yes.
You're saying any leftover money would have been put into that construction project?
If
there's money left over, but it's anticipated that all of the funds will be used, and the district is covering any shortage of funds during that period.
Trying to make sure we have a little bit of additional money in that fund for any other things.
Okay, now, normally, all that money would have gone into the TIF.
From this lease?
From the sale of this property and all that stuff. That would have normally.
No, it was excess property. It would have gone back into the capital budget.
Find it effective. But it would have gone into the general capital.
Yes.
Well, we made the decision to use it here.
We made the recommendation to use it this way, and the general manager has recommended another.
In this case, but previous actions.
Yes.
The board has already basically made that decision.
Yes.
That we would use it for basically what is related to this area.
Correct.
And what you're suggesting now is this extra amount of money that we're dealing with today, instead of being used in that way, would go into a more general capital.
I'm making that recommendation.
That's what I'm saying. That's the recommendation you're making. Because we need a lot of it there, and you think we'll be okay over here.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Benjamin.
If I remember correctly, we had a very firm agreement in our last action on the $1.4 million. We did the $9.5 million for operating, and then the agreement, which was memorialized in a resolution of the board, which you would now have to overturn for you to do your original recommendation, was that $1.4 million would be added to that for the district, and after that, the district committed to paying the costs of any deadheading that was required for operations. So at this point, we would be overturning the last board action if we were to do what the original proposal said, and we would be actually following the normal process of this money going into the capital fund if we do what the general manager has recommended. So I strongly support what the general manager has recommended.
Just for clarification, following up on that, am I to assume the money generated from the lease, if it goes into the operating reserve account, is money that the district might otherwise have to pay? What is the order here? Is the order that the district pays when we run out of money, but if we include this money into the operating account, that pushes further off when they would start?
I think that's a good way of explaining it. Yes, the $1.4 million, I think, is the first money that gets used, then the district's money. And if this money was applied to it, that would just delay the input of district money into the account.
Okay. I absolutely agree.
Is there a motion?
On a move.
Is there a second? And the motion is that you are taking the general manager's recommendation to transfer the funds in capital. Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. There are two information items, and the first is the item on the Metro Matters program. And that is a briefing, and it's a plan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In 2004, the Board of Directors approved the Metro Matters Financial Agreement with the various jurisdictions that fund Metro's operating and capital needs. Under that agreement, there is a requirement that we report back to the Board on the status of the program on an annual basis. And while we have reported this back as part of the budget process, today we will brief you, it's a pretty in-depth, very long briefing on the status of very specific projects, where they are, what projects are still needed, and then the second part will get into projects that are not part of Metro Matters but are urgently needed by the agency. And this morning, Dave Couch will make that presentation. And so, Dave, I'd like to begin.
Thank you. By way of background, as Mr. Cato said, the Metro Matters program is a $3.2 billion program that put us on an expenditure basis as opposed to an obligation basis for the first time. Through fiscal year 10, the projection was to expend some $2.6 billion of that funding and then to have the remaining out over the succeeding years. There basically are three different portions to the Metro Matters program. The first is what I'll call a state of good repair, ensuring that all of our facilities are maintained so that they are operational and reliable at all times. The second piece is to provide the capacity for 50% eight-car train operation. And the third part is to go ahead and do some bus service improvements. The remainder of the presentation will be divided along those three lines so you can get a flavor on what we've been able to accomplish during that time frame. The first portion deals with power projects. In this case, the early power projects deal with what we call the house power, the portions that provide power into our passenger stations for elevators, escalators, station lighting. There are three principal components to those. The bottom right picture is a picture of the AC switchgear. That's the component that the main power is brought in off the power grid. There's a backup system that is provided of an uninterrupted power system, which is a picture at the center. And on the left is the battery backups that actually provide the power when we're in an emergency situation and the feeders are down. The table on this page is reflective of the way the entire presentation has been put together. It shows the number of these components in the overall system. It shows the number of those components that are contained within the Metro Matters program. And the left-hand column, if you will, is the portion that has been completed to date as of basically the end of last month. So in this case, we've got some 202 sections of switchgear on the system in each one of the passenger stations, and we've successfully completed the replacement of 48. The next component is the distribution system for the power that goes out into the various components in all of our stations and tunnels. The lower left is a picture that you can catch the corner of a ventilation fan. Those are powered by motor control centers that are on the right-hand side. And the numbers above are the ones that are representative of what's in the total system and then what's been accomplished to date. The next component of the power is really the portion that provides the tractive power to all of our trains. We have 92 traction power substations within the system. We've currently completed work on 40 of those. It's a combination of upgrades for Metro Matters, which I'll deal with later, and also the normal replacement program that has to go on. The picture at the lower left is a transformer. That's an exterior transformer that are located in the courtyards outside of a traction power substation. And the picture on the right is that of a rectifier, which converts the incoming power from AC over to DC to be able to provide 750 volts to the traction power system. All of our trains are controlled by an automatic train control system. We have various projects that are underway. The picture on the bottom of the next page provides you a picture in the test program of replacement of RTUs, remote terminal units. These are used in each one of our train control rooms throughout the system, and they relay the signals that come from the main operations control center through these devices and out to the individual devices on the rail. The next page is a continuation of automatic train control projects. We have track circuits, switch machines, interlocking processors. All of those various components are what comprise our train control system. In this case, the track circuit modules. We have some 2,800 of them, and currently under contract, we've got about a third of that number. Switching to the communications types of projects, on the lower left is a picture of the inside of one of our main fire and intrusion control panels. Those are located in the communications rooms in each one of our stations. They provide the alarming and the intrusion detection connections back to each one of our doors, gates, and any of our smoke and fire detectors located throughout the stations. The center picture at the bottom is a picture of a CCTV camera located in the upper arch of one of our underground stations. We're in the process of replacing those at 27 stations under the Metro Matters program. The picture at the right is the new design for our PA system speakers. The sound quality in a lot of the underground stations has been very poor. We've looked at and redesigned the system so that we've brought the speakers down to a level that is slightly above head height on all the platforms for center platform stations and added those devices to the sides of the pylons. That's much improved the quality of the announcements and the sound within the stations. Shifting over to the mechanical projects, all of our facilities underground are protected by standpipe systems so that in the eventuality where there is any kind of an underground fire, the fire departments from the jurisdictions can come in and connect to that dry standpipe system. The picture at the right is a picture of one of the risers that goes up a shaft to a standpipe connection that would be at the top of the shaft that the fire truck would connect to. The lower left is the installation of the 4-inch pipe system along the tunnel wall. We have connections every 200 feet so that as the firemen come in, they can connect their hoses up to each one of those points. To go ahead and handle the water within the system, we have a series of drainage pump stations. The picture at the lower left is one of those drainage pump stations. There are 58 of them on the system, and there's 31 that we will be replacing within Metro Matters. The lower right is a sewage ejector, which takes the effluent from the sanitary portions of the underground system and pumps it up into the sewage system in each one of the jurisdictions. Continuing on the mechanical projects, we have in all of our underground stations air conditioning systems. They're comprised of cooling towers that sit on the top of many of the buildings that we have around town in the area where the system is underground. The picture on the lower right is a picture of one of the cooling towers, and on the left is actually the chiller that converts the higher temperature water, lowers it, and then brings it back out into the system. We have over 278 units within the stations that are those air conditioning units, and 201 of those are scheduled to be replaced during the Metro Matters program. In terms of emergency tunnel ventilation, the lower left picture is a picture of some of the large fans that we have. In case of emergency, those fans can be reversed to bring either air into the system or to exhaust air from the system out to the outside and control smoke. On the lower right is one of the damper assemblies that is activated so that you can go ahead and close that and control the amount of air that is flowing in or out. There's a series of those, particularly the tunnel fan overhaul, which we're going to be doing all of those under the Metro Matters program. There are a series of small environmental projects. Each one of our bus garages and rail yards has areas where there are underground storage tanks. In some cases, they're for diesel fuel. In other cases, it's for regular gasoline or antifreeze. There's a series of things that have to occur in terms of double wall tanks, detection systems to ensure that there are no leaks. And in this case, we've done things with removal of some underground storage tanks We've put in some oil-water separators, and also in locations where there are changes in elevation of piping, we've gone through and placed solenoid valves to control the flow and backfeed of any of the fluids within the system. Shifting to the automatic fare collection, the recent projects have centered around acceptance of the new dollar coin, initiation of credit card acceptance at some parking garages. We have 14 of those installed. We've also installed new parking meters that are able to be programmed for different values now, depending upon what the board approved value is for each one of the spaces. Those meters have been installed principally over the last month to month and a half. And an update on what's in your package of the 3,384 that are in the system, we've got slightly over 2,900 installed right now. And by the first of next month, all of the meters will be upgraded throughout the system. On the structural side, this really is a composite of things that we have to do to maintain a state of good repair in parking garages. We have two different types of parking structures on the property. One is a precast garage, the other is cast in place. They all require rehabilitation on a periodic basis to ensure that the structure stays in a state of good repair. The picture on the lower right is one of our station vaults in the underground system where there has been some spalling and cracking and deterioration of some of the concrete. So we'll go in at that point, do a repair to the concrete and route and repair any waterproofing issues that have occurred. The following page is the underground system between stations. The two pictures at the right are some of our circular tunnels. The top one is a cast-in-place concrete tunnel. In that case, we have to go in periodically, repair damage that has occurred as a result of concrete deterioration or, in a lot of cases, leakage. The lower right picture is one of our older tunnels. It's a segmental steel tunnel liner system that was principally used on some of the early Green Line stations down through Waterfront. That's a different type of technology that was used in high water table areas, and it's got an older system that has got lead and caulking joints and bolts that need to be replaced on a periodic basis. So those are the type of projects that occur in the underground sections between stations. The next slide takes you to structural repair, and the picture on the upper right is the project that we successfully completed in February, the replacement of the bearings under the platform bridges in Metro Center. It was one of the more difficult projects that we've undertaken, and it required us to do that over a three-day weekend in order to be able to lift those concrete beams, put the new bearing pad in place, and then lower them back in. So it was a different technique that we used. It was a different timing that we used. And it was extremely successful, and we look forward to trying things along the same line in the future with other projects. The lower right picture is a picture of the Yellow Line Bridge that comes over the Potomac. In that case, we have a series of piers that go down to pile caps under the riverbed. You have to do a periodic inspection of those to ensure that none of the fill around the pier has deteriorated or been eroded away as a result of the river flow. In this case, the picture that's here is a rehabilitation project where we were going back in and filling back in with large riprap some of the areas that had been scoured out around some of the piers. This project was completed a couple of months ago. Inside of the rail facilities, where we do the heavy maintenance on all of our consists, one of the items is the train wash. The picture on the left is a picture of that. It's not unsimilar to what you would see going through a typical car wash in any of your towns or cities. In this case, it's large enough so that you can bring an 8-car train through there. It's a process that you have an application at one end and then a set time by the time the train gets to the other end of the car wash, and then a wash-off, rinse-off to clean the cars. The lower right is a picture of a wheel truing machine. This is the area that we use to go ahead and bring the wheels back to round from the flats that occur principally when we get into flat season and the leaves are on the rail in the late fall. On the bus facility side, there's two principal items of work that we've been going on. First is a lift replacement program. It has been a three-part program. One is with replacement of a series of portable lifts, which is the picture at the lower right. We also have two other types of lifts that we've installed. One is a parallelogram that basically is a scissors lift that brings the buses up. And the third is the replacement of in-ground lifts. We've stayed away from all of the in-ground lift replacements and tried to go to more of the parallelograms and portables. It keeps us away from the environmental issues of the hydraulic fluid underground. At the lower left is a boiler that was replaced at one of the bus garages. In the right-of-way, there are a series of track replacements that are done under the Track and Structures office. It is everything from replacement of running rail, cross ties, track fasteners, turnouts. The lower left is a picture with a replacement of one of the pieces of special track work at a double crossover. The centerpiece is a panelized section of track that's being dropped in. And the picture on the right is tie replacement, where each one of the ties are extracted when they've reached the end of the useful life and then reinstalled using this piece of equipment. On the elevator and escalator program, we have had major rehabilitation and upgrade of elevators and escalators, including installation of additional safety devices that have been required as a result of upgrades to the code over the years. During the life of the Metro Matters program, roughly 60% of the escalators will be upgraded, and about a third of the elevators will also be upgraded, which is on the next page. The picture on the right at the next page is the piston of a hydraulic elevator. And the lower right picture is that of a controller for an elevator. We've gone all to PLC logic-based controllers for all of our elevator operation. On the vehicle side, as the board has previously approved, we're in the process of obtaining the CNG BRT type articulated buses. There was a briefing at the last meeting and also an order of New Flyer buses of hybrids. The 2,000 and 3,000 series rail cars rehabilitation midlife that started several years ago is reaching the final stages. There are 316 delivered back on the property of a total of 364. So we're reaching the end of that sometime later this summer. That is the portion that is the state of good repair component of the presentation. The next piece provides us with what we've done or have in the process to be able to provide up to 50% eight-car train operation. The first portion is increase in capacity in the metro yards to be able to have more shop space to maintain the increased rail fleet. The first facility that we've done is the Brentwood Yard. The pictures at the right are progress photos that show the installation of the track and the approach slabs into the building. We'll be completing this portion of the project in May, and this will give us increased capacity right in the center of the red line. Similar projects at the Greenbelt Yard to facilitate the small shops and component repair that came out of the Brentwood shop. There was a new annex that was built out in the Greenbelt facility. That provides the ability to do the repair of all of the components that come off of the rail cars in one central location and freed up valuable floor space in the Brentwood shop to allow a reconfiguration. The picture on the right here in Greenbelt is work that was done on the lifts and the cranes and an increase in capacity for the truck repair area. Shady Grove on the lower right basically was almost a doubling of capacity of the shop. It was basically a new building that was built right up against the existing S&I shop with four tracks, with lift capability, and also posted rail to be able to do undercar inspections. The operation of the new 6000 series cars is the next slide that's part of the 50% train operation. There are 184 cars in that order, and to date we have 170 delivered with 158 conditionally accepted, and looking forward to completion of that project and program. The following slide provides the power to the rail cars. This is the traction power upgrade. It was done and programmed in three different components. The first would allow for every fifth train to be operated as an eight-car train. That was completed a little over a year ago. The component to be able to do the upgrades to get to one every three cars for eight-car train operation, we have two substations left to do. One of them is at West Falls Church, and the other one is on the Red Line at Klingel Bridge. And we anticipate completing those by June of this year, which will allow us to run up to every third train as an eight-car train. The last component will be completed by the end of this calendar year, and that provides the final upgrade to get us to 50% eight-car train operation. The picture at the lower left is an increased capacity bond to be able to handle the return current back from the track, and the picture at the right is one that shows the interior of a traction power substation. The lighter area patch in the foreground is an area that has been prepared for installation of new equipment. There's a pad that's called an amazite pad that's an electrical isolating pad that you then set the heavy electrical equipment on. The last component to the eight-car train operation is modifications to the onboard software for precision stopping. That has been completed on the 1 and the 5K series. Testing is ongoing for the 2s, 3s, and 6s, and that's expected to be completed this summer. So that will allow for a more accurate stopping at the berthing point in all of our stations. The last component was bus service enhancements in the program. There were two components to this. The first and the major one is the West Ox Bus Garage. That facility is currently under construction with completion anticipated this fall, and we're looking at commencing operation in that facility in January. As part of the service enhancements, we have also gone through an onboard systems integration to ensure that all of the components within the bus are communicating electronically with each other and also feeding that back to the main control center. That project has been underway, and we're completing that right now. In summary, we've been pursuing the completion of all the projects that are included in the program. We have gone through a thorough review of what will occur through FY10, and right now we are projecting to be in accordance with the projected expenditures. What that does is it causes us to have to slow down a couple of the projects so that we do stay within that cap. And that is the forecast that we have worked our way through, and there's an appendix that explains that. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Before, in that last item, we are looking at the designated expenditures, and we are putting that against what we identified in the Metro Matters piece, and what we see on this list then is that the following list of everything that's deferred? Is it there because of a change of cost that we intended to address from the Metro Matters?
There's two components to that. One, as was explained in a previous meeting concerning the buses, there is a higher per unit cost on that. Some of it is timing on projects. Some of it is we started a lot of the early projects with the rail cars and the shops. The other projects that are the behind-the-scenes components that required a design, we've now completed a lot of those designs. Because of where we are with the funding stream and the expenditures, some of the projects, like air conditioning in some of the stations. Got the design done, and we've got it on the shelf right now until we get the right funding stream.
Yeah, thank you. This is a very thorough report, and certainly as one who's a big proponent of the cost of ownership, you know, state of repair projects are a very good list to work from. I'm kind of curious, of the $2.666 billion, how much of that is the state of repair versus the enhancements for the buses or the expansion of the eight cars? What's the dollar value of the state of repair versus the other two? You've broken them out that way.
Yeah, the bus portion of the program was roughly $200 million. The eight-car capacity increase was $600 million, which leaves 2.4 for the state of good repair. The lion's share of that goes into the rolling stock type of item.
Okay, the other question I have relates to what is the value of those deferred projects? In other words, you had a list of these deferred projects. What's the value of that?
$180 million.
Huh. All right, it just seemed to me it would be more than that, but okay, that's a good thing. The other question is, in there you have emergency repairs or emergency construction. During the past year, we had those electrical fires. Uh-huh. Would that kind of money be used for those repairs, or would it come from another source?
It depends. That amount of money that is in that line item is extremely small. It's historically a couple of million dollars per year. It is used for items that are not contained in the regular program. When you look at a transformer, a single transformer is going to be $200,000 to $300,000. So it really is something that is the unplanned occurrences that come up. It just depends upon what they are and which happens first. Or
does that mean that the electrical repairs were done with this money?
A portion of it was done with that. A portion of it, because we were fortunate on the electrical repairs at Potomac Yards, that traction power substation was scheduled for rehabilitation under the eight-car train program. It was not scheduled until February, so we were able to pull it back in time because the equipment was available. Okay. So there was a marginal cost for pulling it back in time, but the bulk of the money was already in the program.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Chairman, this is an information item.
Yes.
We will be receiving more information.
Yes, you will.
Sure. One of the things I'd like to see, this is a nice review of some of the projects on the program. I think that we'll be served by some summary information that kind of shows how much was in the, we've got the total number here, but how does that break down among the different parts? Whether this is state of, and so on. So how much of this is eight-car trains? How much is so on? How do they break down? How much did we plan to do? What did we do? And referrals, lots of projects, what are they told them? So we can get a sense of the relative magnitudes and how all the pieces go together. I think it's also important to understand what this was as a component of our capital project, capital program. It's not. Metro Matters wasn't our whole capital program. It's a specific initiative on the capital program. And for a variety of reasons, I never fully understood Metro Matters. But particularly because there's been a lot of change over the last several years since we started this, and it has been some time. I think it's important for everybody inside and out to understand what it was that was being done here and why. So I think some documentation of the history of this valuable both for board members, especially newer board members, to understand what was behind it. I suspect it would also be valuable for staff people who are not here with us.
Yes.
But let me just say briefly that this was begun several years ago after many years of planning for long-term capital needs of the agency and many years of being told there's no money to do anything. And lack of action on both the state and especially federal level to provide for anything. So we had done a long-term plan looking at what things we needed to keep in repair the system we have, what enhancements we need to accommodate growth on the existing system, and what expansion we want to do, given the growth that's projected for the region, all solely to maintain the share the transit had at that time, a decade ago. Just the minimal goal of not losing share for transit. He said, what do we need to maintain the current system? What do we need to provide better usability of the system, better access to the existing system? What would we need to do by way of expansion? And we had that three-part long-term capital program, which came out to a very large number over a 30-year period. And we were told, we got that money. We took a part of that and said, okay, what can we do for 10 years? Just basically to meet the needs of those projects. Not saying if you want a transit to do lots more, like get more cars off the road, like save on gas so their country would be less oil dependent, like reduce air pollution, but really just to stay where we are. And we came up with a 10-year program. And there was no movement on any of that. And yet growth in the system was coming at an increasing rate every year, year after year after year. We were seeing rising demand on the system. And we could see going forward just in a few years, we were going to be in a lot of trouble. We were at that time bringing in new rail cars, and we had ordered that the 5,000s were coming in, and the 6,000s were on order. And we had negotiated a pretty favorable contract on the 6,000, and there was an option for 184. But there was a deadline for that. We exercised the option, I think it was October of 04. We exercised the option. We got all those additional rail cars at the price previously negotiated, and minus the years of inflation and all that, and they could be delivered in a certain time because they're already gearing up to produce all of them. We didn't, and of course, when we wanted new rail cars, we'd have to go out all over again, negotiate what would undoubtedly be a higher price and take longer to get. So we had a whole set of needs, like running 8-car trains, which we weren't able to do at that point, for which we needed rail cars and power system, upgrades to train control and all that required investment. But the thing that was really pushing us was if we didn't make the deadline on exercising the option for those 184 rail cars, then we were in trouble. Because you can't decide a year later that all of a sudden, oh yeah, we wanted those anyway. So basically this was put together by Metro staff at the time to find a way to leverage every dollar we had, given that we weren't getting any help, use whatever resources we could get hold of and essentially front load what we could do. It wasn't necessarily the best long-term approach to capital. It was, you're going to be in huge trouble if you don't do something by a deadline, and you have to do something. It's not going to matter 5-10 years later if you don't take the action now. So that's essentially what was done under Metro Matters. And, of course, the second part of that was, then we're going to go and make the case that the state and feds have to participate in order to do all the other things that, in fact, really need to be done. And so we had the Blue Ribbon Panel, and the recommendations of that, push for federal legislation, push for state legislation. This was really supposed to get us through, and for the most part, it has been doing that. You can ask yourself what it would be like today on the commute if we didn't have those. Are we up to 100 and something of 184 rail cars that have been deployed already? More than half of those are out there. How many 8-car trains are we running now?
We're over 30%. We will be at 50% by spring of next year.
We were at 0% 5 years ago. So imagine if we didn't have those now, how would we be moving 700,000 people a day in the rail system? We wouldn't. So we had to do that, and that's why we have to carry through the rest of this. There's other elements to it, including the demands on the bus system and all that. But it's important to understand why it is we did this, why we are where we are now, but also what it means for where we have to go. We have had no help on the federal side, basically, and we continue to get no help on the federal side. On the state side, we've made progress, but of course, in one jurisdiction, mine, we've had a huge setback in the last month, which means that without action by the General Assembly this spring in a special session, I expect the governor to call on next. We have a real big problem being able to move forward with the things that are on the deferral list here and the things that are in the next presentation. Of course, if they act, then we know exactly what it is we need to do, how to do it, when we do it. But it is important to understand the local support for Metro has basically leveraged everything it could to do what absolutely had to be done. And the manager is now before us with a set of things, particularly in the next presentation, that absolutely have to be done and prioritized from stuff we really should do, but we can maybe wait a little bit longer if we have to, because these top things got to be done, and scrounging around for any way to accomplish the things that must be done. In the end, though, that can't all be done in this building, because this place doesn't control funding. That's the way we've set up this agency, dependent upon participating governments and ultimately people who use it, which are not only general public, but to a very real extent, the government of the United States of America, which depends heavily on it to deliver something on the order of half its workforce, are going to have to step up, or people shouldn't be surprised we have problems going forward, whether it's reliability of rail cars or deterioration in parking garages from one end of the system to the other. Have to invest the needed capital. That's what we've been trying to do the last few years. That's what Metro Matters has been doing for us, but not enough. It is a stopgap measure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. Are there any other questions or any comments?
Thank you.
Okay. It may be good to get to that in that next piece, because I think your comments set that well. And in looking at that next piece, I think we might want to characterize, and I have some questions later, but characterize what is being posed here at a time where jurisdictional budgets are challenged, and with Mr. Zimmerman's comments as to how we've gotten here to address this, that the characterization of some of the challenges that face Metro frequently are written or spoken as if there is neglect that is being done as a result of our being here, yet indeed it is trying to move forward on a system that is aged but has no plan of how to continuously maintain itself. And I think really the presentation we just finished reflects really the commitment that's been made here.
Right.
And it is a bit frustrating, as we are often reviewed as to the performance we have, but indeed the performance is pretty darn good considering. Let me just give Mr. Crouch, just you quickly go through this, but I think we'll have some questions. Yes.
This is the purpose of this is to identify the urgent unfunded capital needs. By way of background, we have gone through a prioritization process. We've looked at operations and current maintenance issues. We've looked at a lot of the things that have happened to us principally in the last year, thinking back to the power problems that we had last August. We've divided this presentation into 8 different areas, and what I'll do is to go through each one of those areas and identify some of the things that we now have.
And I think that you can summarize some in each area,
okay,
unless there's a reason to that we build on each of the slides, but I think we'd like to get to what we define, why urgent, what the plan proposal.
Okay. The water-related issues really are, we've got deterioration on concrete, which is on the Shady Grove slide. The next page takes you to issues that are there with track work, insulators, wet conditions. The next page on water-related, and really this is a third of the program that we've identified, is the water-related issues.
And one of the things that's there is this is a piece of power cable as you install it in to provide all of the power to the third rail. One of the pieces that we have pulled out in that replacement process is what has caused, as a result of the water deterioration, this is a cable that actually failed in service. It looked like this when it was installed, and as you wind up with the water infiltration and the heat that is caused, this cable actually exploded within the conduit and failed and had to be taken out and be replaced.
So this is one of the examples of one of the challenges that we've got in front of us. And as I said, the water-related issue number one is about a third of the program. The next issue goes to rail cars. There's a series of things that are NTSB and related to continued use of the Roar fleet. There's a structural repair that's a picture in the lower right that needs to be done. Next issue goes to bus cameras. We've got different cameras on some of the buses right now. This takes us through remainder of the fleet. Metro Access, going ahead and getting more reliable and newer vehicles. Truncated domes is a program that we started years ago that did the key stations but did not complete all of the stations. So this would finish up and have consistency throughout the system. The bus facilities are in desperate shape. In a lot of cases, we've got facilities that are almost 100 years old. And this is a step in the direction of the APTA recommendations that were identified about 2 years ago. Passenger facilities is the picture on the left is pavement failure in some of the parking lots. The right is the deterioration to a lot of the paver tile that we're seeing in stations. The continuing passenger facilities goes through chiller plants on the next page. Information technology, we've got old business systems that have been here for a very long time, some since the system was first put together. And that is a challenge that is $35 million within the next 24 months. On page 95, this summarizes the urgent needs into the categories that I just went through. It's provided on a projected expenditure basis. It's not a fiscal year, but it's an annual year based upon when we actually determine the funding and can get started. It's a total of $489 million over the entire eight-part program with expenditures by items for each one of the 2 years.
Thank you. Any questions? Just a clarification, you define these as urgent. We looked at the Metro Matters piece, and we're saying these are all outside of that piece.
Yes.
And therefore, not moving forward means that we deal with the continuous deterioration, but I guess better said, the disruption and subject to failure of service to the customer.
Exactly right. These are all reliability issues.
Madam Chair, if I might, and we will provide this information in the summary form. For an example, one of the slides in the state of good repair, when we talk about track fasteners, under Metro Matters, there's 86,000 that are scheduled to be repaired or replaced. However, in the system, we have 330,000. So the number is far greater, and that's an area that we've had significant problems. And the same thing for the tunnel leaks. But I would like to go to the next slide, too, and talk about what approaches do we take and what we will explore in coming back to the board. And there's different strategies. And the strategies that we're looking at, and again, we have to look at every project, determine is it absolutely necessary today, including existing projects we're working on, to determine if we can reprogram existing dollars. There are no new dollars there at this time. The jurisdictions have provided the monies for Metro Matters over the past few years for this entire program. They're facing budget constraints due to the weakening the economy, the impacts of the economy and the housing crisis. So that's not an option for us. Short term is to look at what are we doing, what dollars can we reprogram, and even at this list of critical, what is it today we need to do? And we're working on that analysis. We will bring it back. The longer term, when you reprogram dollars like that, you still have the programs that you need to do. Everything needs to be done. I'm currently serving on the task force with the American Public Transportation Association as a co-chair to help develop the new federal transportation bill that expires in 2009. And Director Benjamin is also a member of the program committee of that organization. And our efforts will be to increase the federal funding significantly. for the longer term. Again, we're just planning, we're beginning the process, but we're thinking proactively from a strategical standpoint where possible funding can come from. And we intend, and I intend to return to the board in the April-May timeframe with recommendations on any reprogramming, because that has to go back to the jurisdictions to receive their approval, and also where we are with the long-term funding aspects, looking at federal funding, because that's the approach, that's the only approach that we have.
A question, because I appreciate the opportunity to come up with some options and think of how we address this, but I think, and Mr. Zimmerman kind of went through the history of the Metro Matters and why we were there and what it has done for us. But if I recall, there was the longer term, and then we were at 2011. In what context do we look at these urgent pieces as part of that original analysis, or is this completely separated?
Well, in the original analysis, the work done by the commission, it identified, as Mr. Zimmerman said, even a greater need.
Right.
And our increases in ridership has been faster than projected. This was not identified specifically in Metro Matters. Some of the context of it were fasteners were identified, but we need to replace more than what are listed in Metro. Yes. It's a greater need than what was there. However, the funding is still the same, so we're going to have to look at how do we shift things from one category to the other. And then, as I said, long range. At the same time, trying to figure out a way to get dollars to pay for the ones we need to reprioritize.
Benjamin.
I appreciate the comments that the general manager has made, and I very much support them. I also appreciate the comments that Mr. Zimmerman made earlier. We are in a situation where clearly you've identified a set of needs, and I won't try and second guess whether the staff believes that this is the most important set of activities or not. I mean, we have to accept that. You've got to be the technical judges of that. And very clearly, we then have to move to do these projects one way or another. But as has been made clear, the jurisdictions really stretched, and Mr. Zimmerman pointed that out, in approving Metro Matters, and actually that's a $4 billion program, including debt service. So that's quite a stretch for all of the jurisdictions. Even after that, we decided that if the federal government could come up with $150 million a year extra, above and beyond what it does, we would come up with $150 million per year. And we've all committed to that. As Mr. Zimmerman pointed out, Virginia has a current problem with that, but I trust that somehow a solution will come about. So what we really need to do here is find out how to adjust the program that we have defined before to fit this into the dollars that are currently available, plus our hopes, as you pointed out, through a new authorization and potentially the federal government contributing its $150 million per year, beginning in, say, 2011, which would probably be about the earliest that could come about, that all of these projects can get done in a reasonable time frame. And basically, we have to fit it into the resources we have, and we've already defined those resources.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Cato, for your briefing. This is very useful. Just to clarify one thing on the previous chart, it says the 489 million includes 51 of deferred projects. Those were the deferred projects in the earlier briefing, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. All right, that was my prime question on that.
Okay, any other questions? No other questions. I want to thank you for the briefing, and this is really a very important piece. I hope that when we come back, we can have a better description of outlining the projects, the cost, and how they fall into an implementation for that. And I think it will be extremely helpful for us when we come back. I look forward to provide us some back to the board.
Madam Chair, if I could, there is, in the appendix, there is a listing of projects by years, and but still we can add additional information.
Okay. Hearing none. Any other comments? No objection, then we stand adjourned.